Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and I am the host of the show. In here, we'll be talking about the Microsoft Cloud, giving you firstly the news and anything new that's happened in the Microsoft Cloud, and then we'll do a deep dive interview into some of the technologies with an industry expert. So again, thanks again for joining me. We're getting towards the end of 2020. Looking forward to a more positive 2021, I would suggest, if this is your first time. Appreciate you listening along, and please, by all means, everybody out there, let other people know of what we do and the information that we share so we can look at growing the podcast here. So again, as I said, my name is Robert Crane. You can reach out to me at Director CIA and also via email director@ciaops.com. And I share a lot of my learnings and knowledge at my blog, blog.ciaops.com. Now with that, let's get into some of the cloud news. Now to kick things off, as always, there are new and bright and shiny things that have happened with Microsoft 365 since the last month. One of the ones that really, really stood out to me was the ability now to integrate forms into Teams meetings, so we can use these to run pre-canned surveys, but also do ad hoc surveys as well. So what will happen is you can prepare the forms, questions beforehand in Microsoft Forms, and then you can display that during a Teams meeting. So the idea is you create a meeting or run a meeting, you push the add button to add Microsoft Forms in there, and you can do add your polls and your questionnaires in there once you have added forms to that meeting. So really handy feature in there. I will post a link to the video that talks about how to do that and all the other updates that are happening around Microsoft 365, because Microsoft does a pretty good job of sharing a video each month that gives us those updates. Now, of course, specifically in Teams, there is more new stuff happening with Teams. Again, the link will be in the show notes for you to review, but some of the highlights are the AI noise-based suppression. This is rolling out as we speak, so that means that the technology now is there to focus on the individual's voice regardless of the background noise. That's really, really handy. Make sure that you do have the latest client installed on your desktop when you do that. You've also got now the ability to have different background scenes. I think there's even a Christmas theme out there for your backgrounds in Teams if you want to basically do that. We've also now got a full screen experience we can go to in Teams, and we've got some more advances in the mobile capability as well. Now, there has been some improvements around the calling capabilities. So if you're into using Teams to do the calling out to normal telephone lines, by all means, do that. The devices, the dedicated Teams devices are interesting. I'd always be interested to see how well they are selling and what people are using. But it makes sense to, you know, have a dedicated device if you are using, obviously, Teams a lot in your environment or in a shared space as well, which hopefully we'll all get back to relatively shortly. Now, one of the other things that I really liked about Teams that came out with this announcement was pinned posts. So we can now select a post in a channel and we can pin that to the top. So that's really handy when you've got something, you know, like an announcement or whatever. We can make that so that's highlighted no matter what other conversations directly happen under that. Now, there's been more integration with the Power Platform. We've got some automation option. We've got a Power Apps Automate app for Teams. We've also got virtual agents in there as well. And we now have, again, lots and lots of additional automation capabilities thanks to Power Automate in this environment. So if you haven't had a look, again, I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go in and have a look at all of those additions. Now, something that Microsoft dropped actually today was that breakout rooms are generally available in Microsoft Teams. So what this means is you can have a a main meeting, and then what you can do is have a number of breakout sessions from that main meeting. So let's say that maybe you're running, you know, a larger conference session and you put a proposal to the group. You can break the group up into smaller meetings which can meet in these breakout rooms, and then they can be brought back into the main meeting when it is complete. So this is a pretty handy little feature. I look forward to using it in my environment as well. I think it does speak to a need, especially when you're doing bigger events and you do want to, again, keep the whole thing manageable, because what you find is when you do get a lot of people inside a meeting, it can become very distracting and noisy, and there can be a lot of chat that's going on. So breaking that up into smaller rooms, again, makes a lot of sense there. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go in and have a look at that as well. Now, some things from the Microsoft roadmap. They're telling us that Edge version 88 is not going to support FTP anymore. So if you are using FTP with Edge browser, beware that is probably going away. Along with that is also Adobe Flash support, so that's going to be removed as well. And again, one of the other benefits Edge is going to bring to us is the ability to alert us if our passwords are found in an online leak. So very much around the have I been pwned sort of concept. You'll get notified or informed when a password you're using has been made or has been discovered as part of a breach. So some handy options looking to roll out to the latest version of Edge. Now, one of the other things that I'm really keen on is this add to OneDrive. So that functionality is now generally available. The concept behind this is to make OneDrive the location for all your file management. So what we can do is we can take our OneDrive, which is typically personal, and with this add to OneDrive, we basically add a shortcut from other locations, from Teams, from SharePoint sites and whatever, into our OneDrive, so it looks like a normal file and folder inside our OneDrive, and we can synchronize those, we can work with them, we can view them on the app. It's just the same as it would be if we'd navigated to that location, but we can now bring all of that into one central location. So again, think of it a bit like Windows Explorer in the fact that, you know, OneDrive is going to be this way of managing files which could be in various locations inside your tenant. And the way that that would happen is using this add to OneDrive functionality, which you'll find basically on the menu bar available for users. Now, another one around the collaboration space is this new SharePoint success site. This is basically a template that you can import into your environment, creates a new site collection. This is also found on the lookbook. So lookbook.microsoft.com is going to give you that capability to look at all these templates, import them. But this one here, this new SharePoint success site, is there to drive adoption, to help people make adoption of SharePoint and the internet and those sort of collaboration spaces much easier. So they're going to share, you know, the capabilities, and they're going to provide guidance and make it easier for people to understand how SharePoint can, again, help their environment. It's going to give them inspiration and also some guidance around how to create the most effective SharePoint environment that is possible. Now, turning to the security side, there is a really good article that I read here about threat actors leveraging the coin miner techniques to stay under the radar from, again, Microsoft here. It is a little bit long. I'd certainly recommend that if you're interested in the security side of it, or how the attackers leverage different sorts of vectors to get into machines, this is a really good article just to read through and understand, get an appreciation for the lengths they use, the different tools they use, the different techniques they adopt to get into a machine, and they're pretty much relentless in their focus on getting access to a machine. So there's a really good article, which again I'll put in the show notes so you can have a read through that. So a few other things here quickly is Microsoft is announcing a swag of new data centers. So it's announcing a new data center in Sweden, also one in Denmark, and just today they've announced one in Chile as well. So again, the footprint of the Microsoft data centers regions is expanding. We sort of expect this with the growth and the move to the cloud, also driven, I would suspect, by the current pandemic we're experiencing. So lots and lots of investments still made by Microsoft, growing their regions out, improving their redundancy, and making it available to other locations. So good indication that the investment from Microsoft is still there. So again, I'll make sure that all the links to these articles and points I've noted is in the show notes, so you can go and review them at your leisure. As always, I appreciate the time you're taking to listen to this episode. You can always, like I said, contact me directly on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. You can send an email to feedback@needtoknow.cloud or directly to me, director@ciaops.com. And as always, appreciate you have a look at my blog, blog.ciaops.com, and the cloud community that I run to keep people up to date on a daily basis around the Microsoft Cloud, which you'll find at www.ciaopspatron.com. So welcome back to the Need to Know podcast. I'm with a regular guest of the podcast. Welcome back, Mark O'Shea.
Hey, Rob. Good to chat again.
Oh, we seem to be chatting. Many, many things have changed under the bridge. We've had Microsoft Ignite, and many things again have changed and confused people. So hopefully we can put some sort of definity around this and help people understand. And I think that what I think would be good to talk about in this episode's the Microsoft Endpoint Manager and how it sort of fits into the device management concept that, you know, we face today. So, you know, in essence, you know, can you give us a bit of background as to where device management has come from a Microsoft point of view? I know you've been involved with it for a long time, but maybe if you give people a bit of a, you know, a story as to how it's got to the current situation, it'd be great.
Okay, and then I'll tie that into why you need to take action so that you don't keep repeating the past. So that's a good lead-in. Okay, so you sort of think of like pre-Win 2000, you could do local policies, et cetera, but you didn't really have the flexibility that group policy had. So group policy made it really easy for you to start targeting different devices, different users with different settings. And for quite a while, that was kind of the, you know, the center of the management universe. But then in, it would have been 2011 or so, that's when the first, I guess, either the first preview or the first public release of Intune, it must have been 2011, of Intune came out. Now, you've got to sort of remember, and this is something that for people who've only worked with Intune recently, is that, you know, remember that Intune used to be an agent-based management solution. And it was the solution itself was kind of looking for a market in terms of like who it was suitable for. Like it was something that would be great if you were an SMB customer that managed their own environment, but that's kind of the opposite of what most SMBs do. Generally, they've got a partner in there. And partners were already used to some of the feature sets that remote management tools like Kaseya, et cetera, could give you. So they'd sort of look at what Intune as this standalone agent-based solution provided. And it was a pretty tough sell. But over time though, I guess, you know, probably the first major change that you started to see where things started shifting in a different direction was when Windows 8.1 shipped. It had some, like incredibly limited, but it had some MDM capabilities built in. And then moving over to Windows 10, and every release of Windows 10 has just added more and more management capabilities for MDM. So yeah, it's never really going to try to play catch up with group policy, because a bunch of the group policy settings just don't really make sense in today's world. If you're working remotely, you're not looking for a domain control and things like that. So Intune has kind of evolved alongside that. So for quite a while, if you looked at the different MDM options inside of Intune, like prior to Windows 10 launching, you'd find a ton of settings for iOS, a ton of settings for Android, and the Windows settings were kind of basic, because if Windows 8.1 was really the only version that supported it and it didn't expose much, then there wasn't really too much point in Intune exposing a bunch of things for Windows that weren't there. But obviously over the last few years, what you started to see is that shift to really get people to start thinking that new devices that are being deployed, you know, do they really have to join a traditional on-prem AD environment? And I think I know what your answer to that is, which is a no. But yeah, for some orgs, it's something that they're going to have to do for a while. Some orgs are probably still going to have to, you know, appease some people by staying in hybrid AD joined mode. But for a lot of start looking at things like autopilot. it just gets easier and easier to justify just going Azure AD join plus Autopilot plus Intune for MDM. And then, yeah, basically that's your management stack. And I guess we've got to put Azure AD in there as well. And then that's your management stack moving forward. I guess some of the things that still catch people out with this is it's still like 2020 is still a year where I've been asked a couple of times, when will group policy be coming to Azure AD? And the answer is it won't, because it doesn't make sense to do it there. And I think in that case, it's a matter of once you sort of sit down and explain that, you know, that's kind of an on-prem approach that doesn't really translate to cloud approaches. It gets a bit easier, but I guess the naming of Azure AD makes, you know, does give people some, makes them sort of think some things that are correct in that it provides identity and authorization capabilities, but they also start thinking of some of the management capabilities that the OS provides and think that Azure AD provides those as well, when it doesn't really provide the, you know, that kind of functionality. That's what where Intune or, yeah, potentially third party MDM would step in.
So I think to qualify things for people is that, can you do hybrid management which encompasses Intune, push from the cloud, and on-prem group policy? The answer is yes.
Yeah,
best practice is probably don't do it because of the complications and the overlaps. I mean, is that a fair sort of thing to keep in mind?
Yeah, like if you absolutely must, then I guess, yeah, you don't really have a choice. If there's something that where you need to have some of the benefits, such as the some of the traditional system account type access to network resources or things along those lines, there are some cases where it does make sense, but in a lot of cases sometimes it's just easier to rip the band-aid off than to just put more band-aids on top of each other. And sometimes when you chat to people about hybrid Azure AD join, if it's an org that has tried doing pure AAD join and MDM and has found that there's gaps that don't meet their requirements, so they basically have sort of stuck with hybrid, that's an okay conversation. But if someone has sort of never really tried to see if it works, or at least hasn't investigated it, and is just trying to sort of keep things working with as little disruption as possible without really looking to the future, then you know that that's something that's going to cause problems eventually when they do have to start making some of those changes. But what I'd normally recommend, and this is kind of an easy way to sort of give people a way to test it out, is like anytime you've got like a new like persona or user type or scenario in the organization, start with the approach of, could you do this with a pure cloud identity? Or actually, well, it can still be synchronized identity, obviously, but could it be, you know, pure cloud joined and pure cloud management, and basically build from there and see if you do actually hit any issues. And if you're not, then that means that you can start expanding it over time.
Yeah, so I think that another definition we need to put on the table there is this concept of, you know, modern device management, which really points to the endpoint manager, the Intune, managed from the cloud, not from on-prem. So all the stuff we generally talk about when we mentioned modern device management is typically, you know, cloud policies being pushed down to the devices, which really what we want to focus on, because they have more functionality, they're growing, that's where Microsoft's focus is. So that's where all the improvements are going to come. Now, when I started out doing this, you know, in the Microsoft 365 Business Premium space, which is the one that has obviously got Intune, so we received a license of Intune in our environment for each user to allow us to manage devices. We started out with obviously typically MDM, device management, and we go and, you know, do the enrollment. We would do the compliance policy, then we do the configuration policies, and then we'd move over to MAM. We do the application policies and so on. And that was all happy. We're all good to that. And then one day, endpoint.microsoft.com turned up. And all of a sudden, we've now got endpoint policies, it seems, and also the traditional Intune policies. I mean, can you help us sort of understand, you know, what's the where do these fit in? Are they, you know, the same thing? Should we be using one or the other? What's this sort of move to what seems to be, from Microsoft's point of view, endpoint rather than things like Intune?
Well, Intune's still the engine that's powering it all. So I guess it's a matter of, like, if we sort of, because technically it's still in the Endpoint Manager console. So we'd still be saying that they are like endpoint policies. It's just a matter of, I don't want to, we shouldn't call them legacy policies, but let's call them, you know, your traditional device policies or your traditional configuration profiles.
Classic, I think, is the word that Microsoft likes. It's classic
policies. Except classic, when I think classic and Intune, I think of Silverlight, and we don't want to have that conversation. So look, there's nothing wrong with these settings where they are. So if you've got an existing environment and you've been building out, just sort of doing the different device restriction, you know, choosing the OS, choosing the type of settings you want to apply, and then rolling them out. But what you need to start thinking of longer term is when you start to need to get a bit more granularity in them. So things that are fairly common that you'll see is someone might have a policy that mixes and matches settings for different Windows features within that same policy, for example. Now, initially, probably no harm in that because they weren't applying all that many, but now we need to sort of start thinking in a lot of ways. It's almost like we're getting back into some of the thinking that we've had with group policy. Do we want, you know, fewer, more monolithic policies that get applied, or do we want to split it out so that we can do some pretty specific targeting so that if we just want to target a small group of users with a particular set of features, then it's a really easy thing for us to roll that out and then roll it back if needed, for example. So some of the things that, you know, if you sort of think about, you know, should you move them just because you've got a new place to create them? Well, if they're doing the same thing and there's no urgency, it's kind of hard to justify moving an existing working configuration that's fully supported into something where you're probably going to have to go through and test and make sure that everything's working again the way that you want. So the things that I'd normally, or the way that I'd sort of look at it and start making some different recommendations is anyone who's starting from scratch, then all of a sudden you're looking at what policies should you be creating in endpoint security instead. So we're still talking about inside of Endpoint Manager, but instead of going into devices and then the policies, instead we jump into the endpoint security node and start applying the settings from there. And what they're trying to do in that case is just make the more important security settings more visible. So rather than you going, well, hang on, which of all of these different BitLocker settings are the ones that I need, just sort of trying to sort of bring some of the top level things like BitLocker, et cetera, up to the top, just to make it a bit easier for people to locate them. So pulling them out of more monolithic policies probably makes sense eventually. So what I'd sort of say here is, you know, making sure that you don't get to the point, you know, several years down the track of your Intune / Endpoint Manager journey and find that you're too scared to move things around in there or to change anything because you don't know what the impact is going to be. And because that sounds exactly like, you know, a bunch of group policy conversations we've all had over the years where, you know, people not really doing some nice pruning and cleaning up over the years leads to this environment where it's like, okay, this works, we deploy it. We know we probably could make some improvements, but we don't want to rock the boat. So I'd sort of keep pushing, you know, the same thing here around anytime you've got that new scenario or you've got new types of devices that are coming in, something that you can treat a little bit differently to what you've done previously, just set up new policies and start using that pool of users or that pool of devices as the test bed for things moving forward. Now, is it perfect? No, it means that you'll be managing both in, yeah, it's not that you're managing both environments, but you're managing the same settings, but in different locations that if you accidentally apply both of them, then they are going to be conflicting with each other. And it's basically if one's already been applied and you try to apply an updated one, then it's going to report back as a conflict, but it won't make any changes to what's already there. So these are just some of the things where you can sort of go through and look at it in terms of, moving things if it makes sense or For new environments, it's an easy conversation. For new devices, maybe new groups of users, that's where it would also make sense. But just doing a wholesale migration from your existing policies across to, you know, pulling all the security settings out, I'd be concerned if someone said, let's do that over a weekend. I'd prefer that someone went through and said, let's just pick and choose some of them to move over. Let's do it methodically. Let's pick what's important to move across. If any new features start lighting up in that endpoint security node that aren't being exposed elsewhere in Intune, then that's a perfect example of where you'd be going, okay, it's time to move there now, because you're not getting that setting anywhere else. And the example that I always use with this kind of thing is, in some cases, you've probably gone from having custom policies going into traditional policies going, and now that same setting is available in endpoint security. So enrolling with Defender ATP / Defender for Endpoint is a perfect example of that. You know, you could basically see the history in my tenants, you can see the history of how did we configure it for auto enrollment at a certain point in time, whereas now it's just a simple, turn the thing on option.
So I think that there are two major differences that I see when it comes to endpoint versus, let's call it, the Intune approach. The endpoint policies generally are only aimed at Windows 10 or Windows devices. Generally, they're not iOS and Android friendly as yet. Now, do you see that changing down the track? Do you see that iOS and Android will move into this endpoint, or will endpoint always just be a Windows sort of?
No, I think as long as it's security focused, I think we'll see it move into there. Whereas a lot of the device restrictions aren't really things that you will see move over. But I guess because on the Windows side, there are a lot of like Windows 10 security features that they're really trying to get customers to adopt. I think that's probably, that would be an easy explanation as to why there's the focus on the Windows side. Working on another assumption, in most cases, the Windows devices are going to be corporate-owned devices, which means that the org is going to be much more comfortable locking it down to whatever degree they feel comfortable with. Whereas on the Android side, a lot, just generally speaking, not necessarily for every organization, but generally a lot more of that is going to be BYOD. So when it comes to what you can do to start securing the device, is going to be way more restricted in terms of what the person who owns the device is actually willing to put up with. So to me, that would be part of it. So thinking about, the audience, who they're targeting for it. Also, I guess the other thing there is you sort of looking at it going, for a lot of orgs, they would be using device enrollment on iOS and Android, even in a BYOD scenario, not using, not just relying on app protection policies without enrollment, for example. So I think that's probably, part of the logic as to why you're seeing more of that Windows focus. But even in there, I haven't got it open in front of me at the moment, but even some of the things when you do look in there, like things like the disk encryption, you've got your Mac settings in there. I'm just sort of thinking of, device compliance is across the board, conditional access, or I guess it's just a link to conditional access. But it's, definitely more of a Windows tilt to it, but
it certainly has more around, obviously, the Windows side. That's heavy. We understand that. You can see the Mac stuff beginning to come through. There's no, that I've seen yet, iOS or Android. And again, that's, we can understand that because they're well so where they are. And again, down the track, because they are external vendors as well, you can see them, Microsoft getting familiar, getting it working with Endpoint with its own technologies and then looking to incorporate the others. So again, I sort of see that as, I agree with you, I think that's the way it's going to go. It's not going to happen tomorrow or in the short term, but I think in the long term, it certainly is. Now, the other benefit I see of Endpoint over traditional Intune, let's call it, is this concept of baselines. Now, inside our Endpoint, we get what's called security baselines. And at the moment, we have one for Windows 10, Defender, and Edge, and there is one coming for Office shortly. Now, the really good thing about this is these are obviously, settings that Microsoft has defined as being best practice around security that you can place your own policy on. You can make your own edits and adjustments,
yeah,
and then push that out. And the other really good thing is when Microsoft releases a new baseline, you can basically update your baseline with any customizations to take care of it. Now, that's not something we've had in Intune. Intune has always had to be, you've done it sort of on
your
own. You're doing
everything from scratch, yeah.
Yeah, so here, where I see it being an easier approach now for a lot of people, they can say, right, if I'm starting greenfields, let's just start with the baseline and then work backwards, rather than having to do each, you know, build each policy individually.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a
and big mix, yeah, missing something when you deploy the next version of that template, for example.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, obviously it's a great thing. You can say, right, you know, and a lot of these baselines are done with the, you know, the Australian Cybersecurity or the NIST or all these sort of things involved. Now, the big challenge is that I'm finding now is if you have a look at, for example, the Windows 10 security baseline, again, it rolls in BitLocker, it rolls in Defender, it rolls in, you know, all these options, and it becomes huge and it becomes very difficult, you know, to manage, and you get these duplications with other policies. So
yeah.
I think, you know, if you're starting clean, like you said, you've got a great place, but you've got to be pretty careful if you are moving in this direction. So, you know, best practice seems to be in greenfield, start with the baselines, but again, a bit of research, a bit of time, but in the long run, I think this is going to be a huge benefit that, you know, you can basically, for most SMB resellers or other IT pros who implement it, here's a baseline we can start with rather than, okay, we have to build everything up one by one by one to see what it does.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that, you know, we've been saying for years, but we always forget it, is, you know, most of the world isn't using this stuff yet. The circles that we're in, we just assume that everyone is using this stuff. So we're assuming that people have already got all these existing Intune policies in place. But the reality is that, you know, a lot of people who've had Intune licenses as part of M365B or M365E3 or whatever, haven't necessarily done anything or much with it. So so as much as they might be, technically they could be using it, they may not have really deployed anything that would make deploying baseline policies on Windows 10 an issue. I guess the issue would be what settings they deployed, not the baselines themselves. You know, because if you're following all of the different security recommendations, you're going to have a machine that pretty much is, I don't want to say it's guaranteed to have something you want to work and not work, but if you're not looking carefully, there'll be something in there that prevents people from doing something that you want them to be able to do. And that's by design.
So I think part of the challenge is the obviously the terminology, which unfortunately Microsoft, as it's moving and changing the terminology, does create a little bit of confusion here. So, you know, if endpoint is becoming the way to do at least Windows devices, that then rolls back to, okay, how do you can go into endpoint.microsoft.com now and you can create those policies heart content and you can do whatever you want. But the limitation is going to be they're not going to push out to the devices unless you've got an Intune license for that user, and they're typically Azure AD joined. So I think that's also too where a lot of people, you know, are a bit on. So I can get to endpoint without requiring a license and set up these policies, but to deploy it to individual devices, oh, I need to go and get Intune and do Azure AD enrollment and so on. So I think, again, that's part of the terminology, which hopefully down the track will be, you know, obviously cleared up and focused again. But I think there are a lot of terms in this device management. And of course, you add in NDM and MAM. And I think, you know, there are so many options. And when you start having a look at some of these granular options, but yeah, that said, that's sort of like the group policy days, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. And I guess here, at least something like, you know, this is sort of starting with, you know, trying to hide some of that complexity that you can't avoid with group policy these days. Now, does that mean that sometimes you're not going to find the setting you want and you might need to do a custom setting? Yeah, potentially. But I think if it's anything that's that important or important enough, eventually enough feedback comes in that it needs to bubble up and be exposed somewhere that's more of a checkbox option rather than you having to, you know, hunt down, you know, what's the setting, what's the OMA URI setting, is it, you know, is it integer, you know, what's the response supposed to be? So these are, yeah, so I think with this, it's, you know, I think it's actually good in my eyes that they're sort of expanding it like this, while, you know, a lot of people would be going, you know, why are they sort of doing so many changes if the product is this new? And it's like, well, again, if you go back to Intune sort of being something that was introduced in 2011, it's already gone through a couple of pretty major evolutions since it was released in terms of the functionality, the way you do management, the way you target users or devices. Because remember, the like with the early versions or the, you know, the original way Intune worked was, you know, it was introduced before Azure AD. So it wasn't using Azure AD security groups because they weren't a thing at the time. It had its own groups that you could create. So yeah, so we've already sort of seen some of this stuff where, you know, it evolves at a pretty rapid pace. So it's almost like we get to see side-by-side functionality happening in this case.
And the other thing that I really liked about the endpoint manager, distinct from the Intune stuff of what we used to have, is this concept of endpoint analytics, the ability basically now to look at things like how well software is running on each device, look at, you know, failures, crashes, look at the speed at which the machines boot and the software loads. Yeah. I think that's going to be a huge benefit moving down the track, because that's really going to give you some fantastic insights into how stuff is actually happening on machines. And that's, I think, another reason to move towards this, you know, endpoint option if you can.
And I think, that information that you start seeing will make it easy for you to start identifying the machines that aren't quite up to snuff, or just machines that have got reliability issues. So performance might be okay on the device, even if it's an older device, but it just could be reliability is more of the issue. So anything that starts bringing that information up, and in this case, doing it without having to go through and set up, you know, a log analytics account for Windows Analytics over on Azure. Like, even though I liked some of the functionality it gave, having to explain to people that, oh no, you needed an Azure subscription in order for that to work, even though you would, the costs would get zeroed out each month for you, it was still an extra roadblock to get people to even test it, let alone adopt it. So I think that stuff getting rolled in, even some of the more recent things now where you can actually see something that Intune, or the old agent-based Intune approach that it rolled out with initially, where you could get your AV status and see devices that have had had infections or received dodgy files, etc., or seeing your AV status, like that stuff is now what's in preview, but it's public preview anyway, but at least that stuff is now finally lighting up again. So just there's, you know, some of those gaps that have sort of been there for a while, seeing them finally filled is, it makes it easier to have some of these conversations.
So an interesting one here, which they are fixing, but this I can tell you, this is an example of how perplexed it really got me. So for example, I started playing with the endpoint analytics. You go into the option that's reports, and then you've got the option called endpoint analytics. You press a couple of buttons, you enable it for your environment. You want to look at the startup performance, proactive remediations, and recommended software. So turn it all on in the environment, and it all seemed good. And then all of a sudden, firstly, I found that there was additional Intune policies that have been created. So these were data collection policies. That wasn't too bad. It's okay, I need that. Okay, I had to understand that this, you know, endpoint data collection policy is really the endpoint analytics collection policy.
Yeah.
And the other thing, this is what really stumped me for a long time, was like some of my machines were red on this policy. They were having errors, and other ones weren't. And this drove me bananas. It's like, I can't work out what it is, what's the thing. And at the end of the day, it ended up being the machines that had the error were pro machines, not enterprise machines. And the analytics wasn't fully supported across the pro machines. It was like, oh, okay, that's a bit of a limitation.
Because I think even in there, because this is something that I pinged someone on a while ago, and I should follow it up to see, because I think with some of the initial wording around endpoint analytics was they were kind of saying that it was for that you needed to have like when it was like Win 10 E3, or it could have even been that you needed to have like Microsoft 365 E3 or something along those lines.
Typically, you needed enterprise on your endpoint. Now, when I talked to Microsoft about around Ignite time frame, turns out that they are rolling the functionality into Pro in some of the new updates which are still coming, and that's again fantastic, great to know, but again, that was a little bit hidden. It was a little bit, you know, hang on. And it wasn't particularly sort of obvious. And it's like, oh, this is great that it's coming and they're doing this. But again, my understanding is there are some features that are, you know, enterprise E5 only. And the majority now will be supported, but there are some higher level ones which, you know, won't be supported. So I think that, again, it's a little bit hazy, you know, what is, what isn't, and, you know, is it this, is it not this, has been some of the challenges that I found, you know, implementing this and trying to understand at a deep level.
Yeah, and it's, so I'm even sort of, I just sort of opened it up now, because I know that at one point when you were, like when you did jump into the endpoint analytics, actually, maybe it's when you're going up and setting it up initially that maybe it tells you what the underlying requirements are. And I remembered seeing that some of the underlying requirements that it was basically saying, yeah, it was sort of nudging towards enterprise. So I sort of reached out to say, so does this mean yes or no for M365 Business Premium? Because they're sort of trying to make it act, you know, not sort of be excluded with things like this where the message is, oh, you need to have an M365 suite, you know, to get these features. But then you find out that they actually mean enterprise in that case.
So my understanding now is that, you know, whenever they get this release out, which I think they've got it in a cumulative update at the moment, so it's in the next month or two that everybody will get it. So it'll support the ability to report, you know, startup speeds and the analytics side of it and the metrics. But you won't be able to implement the proactive remediations on some of those faults that you find unless you've got a more premium license, typically an E3 or an E5. So that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's good, because reading the stats is great, because in an SMB, you'll typically walk over to the machine and, you know, troubleshoot it, or you'll blow it away using autopilot and reload it, for example. So my understanding is now is that fairly shortly is that Pro will be supported to gather all the statistics, and you won't get read on those policies of data collection, but things like proactive remediation, where you can push out fixes from a single console, that will remain an E3 or an E5 option.
Yeah, as long as they're clear and they tell you what you do versus you don't get, so that then you can make a decision around is it
yeah,
worth
and just, and
stepping
so it tells
up
me,
to something
you know,
else.
In the console, yeah. And it was just a bit confusing, and it's like, and you do the typical searches on the web, and it's like there's not a lot of answers on it, and it's like it's all a bit murky. And then, again, luckily I was able to tie down someone and sort of ask them the question specifically. And it was like, oh, yeah, that's why those machines are pro, they're not enterprise. And, again, it was just a little bit frustrating, you know, tying that sort of thing down. But I think, you know, obviously that we're going to see that as the product or the solution services migrate into this new environment. And again, if you can go greenfields, that's obviously going to be the good way. But I'd certainly recommend people go in and have a play with it, have a look at it, use all of these features, because I think in the long run there's going to be some really, real powerful stuff to really make the end user experience, you know, so much better than what they're used to, and give it a single console to manage all this stuff. So again, a lot of benefits in it. And again, you've got the flexibility to go monolithic, as you mentioned, or individual policies that are targeted. You can still stay in the Intune side of it if you've invested in that. There's no need to jump from one to the other. It's whatever you're most comfortable with. But
yeah,
I think if you're starting afresh, if you haven't got into this, the Endpoint Manager plus those baselines is probably the best place to start.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. So the question then is like how long do you wait before you start moving them across? And yeah, there's no rush for it. There's like, those settings are going to be around forever, well, for a very long time. It's just more a matter of almost like a lot of the other things we see with other portals. So even something like protection.office.com, there'll be things that you stop using it for over time, because that functionality, the new things that are getting added, will be over on like compliance.microsoft.com or security.microsoft.com instead. So I think we'll see, you know, similar kinds of things here within the Endpoint Manager console. Some of the traditional device settings won't be necessarily getting refreshed with the new things that are focused more on security. And I think that actually presents a clearer message. It's like, no, the security settings are down here, as opposed to I'll pick and choose whichever one you want. But they, just like anything, if it's kind of like an extended transition period, it means that like if people aren't sort of being nudged towards the new environment, I don't really see a lot of people making any changes.
Yeah, I think the reality is the best approach would probably be as new machines come online, as new users upgrade their machines, that's an opportunity to obviously put them in a new group in the endpoint side of it and do the best. And then, again, as the older machines are phased out or you repurpose them or blow them away with autopilot or whatever, is to make that transition. But you're right, you don't have to do it exactly tomorrow. Now, the interesting thing I've got is that, let's say, typically at Intune, you enroll the device, you apply compliance policies, and then you apply configuration policies. So typically, your compliance policies might look to see whether the device is jailbroken, whether it's got a BitLocker, whether it meets certain minimum criteria. Now, it seems to me that this concept of compliance, which is obviously evaluated regularly, is not something that is called out specifically at Endpoint Manager. Have they rolled all those policies into the Endpoint Manager thing and sort of done away with this sort of standalone concept of a compliance policy?
So you've got compliance policies now down in...
They're still there, but those compliance policies are Intune specific. So let's just say, as we move to Endpoint Manager, let's say we start with a Greenfield implementation and we put in the Windows 10 baseline. Now, those Windows 10 baseline, they have similar compliance policies, but, it seems to me as though compliance policies have sort of been merged into one policy to rule them all. Is that sort of the thinking here? Rather than having, say, compliance and configuration separate, they've sort of all been, into one policy now.
In terms of rolling everything into baseline?
We had a compliance policy we could apply and a configuration policy for the device. Yeah. In Endpoint, are those two things sort of now rolled together?
No, they're still separate. Okay. Because the compliance policy is just checking to see how the device is configured. It's not doing any kind of enforcement of settings at all. So it's relying on the configuration policies or the baseline security. And this is something that I think is, like, I can definitely understand here where it's almost like the term, device, if you're talking about a compliance policy, that you're going, okay, the device is only compliant if it meets these requirements. You've got to look at the wording to see that it's checking to make sure that we've got matching, that either the device is already configured that way or that we've got something that's pushing settings out to meet those requirements. So, whether it's like a PIN or, six-digit PIN versus four-digit or BitLocker being enabled. So all it's really doing is checking to see that they are there. So, and then we're using that to dictate, if we're using something like conditional access, to determine, can we actually trust this device? Is it in a compliant state in order
or it's a defender rating, low, high, or medium?
Okay. Now the other thing, and this is kind of like on a related tangent from that one, is and this was something that I was just chatting to someone about the other day, was when they were looking at granting access to external users to their environment, but they wanted to use compliance policies. They wanted to check device compliance in conditional access, and it's like, well, if you give them a device that's enrolled to your organization, you can enforce that. But otherwise, it can't check. Your policies can't check their environment to see what's there. And even there, just to sort of give you an idea of, in some kind of compliance policy, just to show that, yes, the device is actually reporting in and compliant. But you could have absolutely nothing in that compliance policy apart from saying, does it pass and have nothing in it? So you don't need to be checking for anything to apply a compliance policy. So just because someone else is reporting a device as healthy, it doesn't mean that the device meets your organization's requirements in any way.
And is it true to say that with Endpoint, I have to be actually enrolled to take advantage of those policies?
Yes. Yep. So, okay. For device compliance policies, yes, the device needs to be enrolled. Now, it could be, it doesn't need to be Azure AD joined, but it needs to be registered with MDM. Yep. So that's where, if it's let's use the example of a contractor's personal device or something like that, you probably would need to start thinking about having like an MDM light policy type of approach where you may not actually be applying any policies to the device in terms of controlling the device, but you might still be pushing WIP out to it or something like that. So you can sort of get, so even though I'm not really a fan of people enrolling their own devices with someone else's organization, sometimes it's kind of what you need.
Yep.
But like on the app, like the pure app protection policy side with Android or iOS, like that's pretty easy to go through and get things working the way that you want. But Windows is and I think we've chatted about it before, but trying to do pure non-enrolled WIP on Windows 10 devices, it's hard work at times.
Mm, exactly. No, I agree.
Like you sort of figure one thing out and then someone says, oh, but this other thing has now stopped working.
Yeah.
So whereas that light touch MDM enroll, if as long as the device isn't enrolled elsewhere, that could really help out with that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it again, it's an interesting, interesting space. I'm sure that there'll be a lot more as this develops. Again, we'll look to obviously, round up our discussion for today, because otherwise we could end up, down the rabbit hole and never coming back. Yeah. So I think that what you're sort of saying in summary is that Endpoint obviously is the new kid on the block. It's utilizing the Intune underneath the covers in a lot of cases, like we see in other areas. If you're greenfields, that's probably what's worth looking at first of the baselines. But if you have invested in things like Intune already, there's no need to make the change. But it's still important to keep an eye on and start having a look at this sort of stuff to get familiar with it. It has a lot of features, a lot of functionality that's going to benefit you, I think, in the long run. And it's obviously worthwhile the investment that you make now, because that is the technology that, again, is going to what Microsoft's going to focus on. But like I said, if you've got Intune, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But again, start having a look at some of the stuff if you haven't already done that. I mean, is that a fair sort of summary of what we've sort of covered today? Do you think?
And probably the other thing as well, and this is something that kind of gets lost a lot of the time, is just that Intune is the underlying MDM and application management solution. So it's the thing that's sitting under the covers, and the Endpoint Manager console is just a console that gives you Intune functionality alongside some Azure AD P1 and P2 functionality. It also exposes some Config Manager functionality if you've got Config Manager on-prem.
Defender ATP.
Yeah, your Defender ATP stuff. Yeah. So it's more that it's just like a, I don't want to call it a unified console, because someone will always say, well, it doesn't have this particular thing in it. But it's just more like the name itself. It's Endpoint Manager. It's around, what are probably the most common things you need to be thinking about when you are managing your device endpoints and trying to protect. And obviously now with a big focus on not just managing them, but ensuring that protection is an important part of that. So understanding that Intune is still there under the covers, and the policies, et cetera, that you're pushing out in a pure cloud environment, it's in, your devices are Intune enrolled devices. They're not Endpoint Manager enrolled devices.
And I think also too, having it in a single console cloud base allows you, especially in our current environment of working remotely, we can manage the devices no matter where they are. That provides enhanced security and capabilities and security, which is really important. So again, if you haven't taken a look at this side of the fence, go to endpoint.microsoft.com, start having a play around with. I think, again, there's lots of documentation and stuff out there that you can reference. Have you got anything that you would point people to, Mark, in regards that, getting started with the endpoint stuff?
So probably docs.microsoft.com is always getting updated with, new getting started guides and things like that. So at least sort of starting there to get a bit of an idea, but just sort of focus on the things you need to get done, as opposed to going down all the rabbit holes of what
all the exceptions,
all the things that can happen, and I think that can be one of the challenges, is you'll see all these interesting links and keep clicking but lose track of what you're actually trying to achieve.
Did you see any good? Were there any good sessions at Ignite? Did you see that may interest people in this space? Have you taken a look at any of those as yet?
Yeah. So I think I'm trying to think of which ones.
Because they've got a whole, I'll put a link in the show notes, but there's a whole one focused on Endpoint Manager, so I can dig that up, and that's got all the ones underneath. I think they had an introductory or, starting out or whatever. They had two different part one, part two. But I can make sure that's in the links there. I just thought some of them might have, jumped out at you if you had seen it, but they're all good.
Yeah, and then the other thing as well is for anyone who's a Microsoft partner, there's also the Endpoint Manager. Let me see if I can find the name of it. I've probably got it here somewhere.
So while you're digging that up, again, just if you've got if people need to get or would like to get in contact with you, what's the best way that they can get in touch
just probably via Twitter. It's probably the easiest way, just tuned in. I'm probably better at responding there than I am through other. If you send me messages via email or LinkedIn, you may or may not get responses to them.
The modern day telegraph, yes.
Yeah, it's just the amount of noise that comes through on them that sometimes I just deliberately choose not to look at them for extended time periods. So it's called the Endpoint Manager Workshop. So, and it goes through a lot of, it's more designed to be something that a partner would be going through a customer with, but if you're a partner who hasn't worked with it before, it would be something that you could go through on your own to figure out some of the bits and pieces. And then it links out to a lot of other useful information as well.
Cool. All right. So if you'll send me through that link, I'll make sure that...
I'll send that link through to you.
Mush goes into the show notes. Is there anything else you'd like to just summarize or cover off or let people know before we look to wind up this session?
Not really. I think everyone we're getting close to the end of year. So I guess if you were going to be doing any kind of policy updates, etc., doing it during quieter periods for a lot of organizations could be a good time to at least start dipping your toes in the water to see how things go.
So my recommendation is if you're going to start playing with this, get yourself a test Windows 10 machine, which could be a VM, a test iPhone and a test Android device, and basically use those to play with, destroy, reset, try the policies out. Again, the best way to experience this is to do it yourself, so you can obviously set those up, put them in different policy sets and keep them separate and get a much better feel. And typically a lot of people, you can pick up, I've got 5 or 6 secondhand phones that people have given me because they didn't want them anymore, and they're quite adequate for doing testing. So there's nothing better than actually, oh, that's what happened here, I shouldn't have done that sort of thing. Yeah. That's what I
do. You also get to sort of see when hardware capabilities do advance versus when they don't advance in terms of this phone took 3 hours to reset.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the other thing too, which does make it a little bit more confusing again, is now that we see, Android and Google have got, their own business manager, and Apple's got the DP, the device enrollment program, and there's lots and lots of programs out there. So I think that, again, getting devices in your hands and playing with them and setting them all up for each environment and combinations is going to give you a much better feel for it, because unfortunately there are a lot of variations, and when you again scale that to a lot of users, it can be very difficult and frustrating to manage if you sort of haven't got that under control. The other thing from my point of view I'd recommend also is just good documentation, just good, keep track of the policies you set, the changes you make, the options that you change, because it can be super frustrating to have a conflict and go, hang on, what did I change last that caused this? So again, slowly but surely, I think is one of the things we've been advocating.
Yeah, and I think as the mobile device management complexity keeps increasing in terms of what we need to configure, it's not as simple to troubleshoot as it used to be, because we've got a hell of a lot more policies being applied than we did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and again, you look at, even so, we've got a lot of iOS versions, potentially a lot of Android versions. We've got, Samsung Knox. We've got, quite a variety of stuff here. So it can be challenging, so good documentation. But we've sort of had similar things with group policy, over time. So those sort of best practices will apply again. And that complexity leads to, a lot more benefits as well. So start simple, build it out. Good thing about the policies is once you get it right, you can then apply it everywhere, so that'll make life a lot easier. All right. Well, I'll take this opportunity to thank Mark for his time. Lots and lots of good discussion, I think, around endpoint security in June, which is what we come to expect. And we'll get that out to people with all the links in the show notes. Again, remember, if you do want to catch up with Mark, have him do so on the Twitters. InTunedIn is his Twitter handle. Also got a great blog as well that you'll find at there. But again, thanks very much, Mark, for being with us and sharing your knowledge.
Okay, Rob, good to chat.
No worries. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.